Hello, welcome again to the Macro and Volatility Podcast, where we discuss the world of investing through the lens of cross-asset and derivative frameworks. My name is Michael Purvis of Talbach and Capital Advisors. We're a macro research firm for institutional investors. I'm here with my good friend and fellow markets prognosticator, Josh Silva.
Hello, I'm Josh Silva, Passaic Partners, a boutique asset management firm designing option-based strategies for institutional investors and retail advisors for more than a decade. Today is July 30th, 2024.
So Josh, I'll kick off. I think a lot of people would agree that the markets are kind of weird right now. And just, you know, to that point, since mid-July, the SPX has sold off as of a couple of percentage points. It's moving a little bit higher off that recent low. This is roughly the same order of magnitude that we saw from the April peak, you know, sort of a 5% sell-off, and before that dip got bought again. So if you zoom out and you just look at the SPX chart over a few years, this looks like a healthy pause that refreshes bull market type of behavior here. But what I find interesting, and I know you do too, is that underneath the surface, there's just a ton of violence. And obviously, we've seen a huge selling of big tech and a lot of sort of rotation buying. But this raises the question, what kind of rotation is really happening here? What we've seen in terms of the most outperformance of the major indices is it's the smaller, the U.S. smaller companies and typically the Russell 2000 or the RTY index or the IWM ETF, all the same thing for all practical purposes. But what's interesting here is that this rotation did not happen during the April sell-off, right? So that's a big difference from April there. And I know you'll get into some of your thoughts as to why this is happening. But, you know, if you look at the, you know, this SPX move, it's really been led by the big cap tech. The NDX is down 7% here. But there's an interesting thing if you look across asset classes. So if we look at the dollar yen, basically, at the same time, we've seen a really large move weaker in dollar yen, meaning the yen's been getting stronger after several quarters of weakening for a whole bunch of different reasons here. And if you look at the SPX Russell 2000 price ratio, and you compare that price ratio relative to the dollar yen, as you would expect, there's usually very little correlation between those two very different types of assets or relationships. And what's really interesting here is that this correlation on this move since earlier this month has been the highest correlation going back more than a decade here. So that's weird. What does the dollar yen have to do with whether the Russell 2000 should beat the S&P 500. So I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to digest here. I mean, this has been under the sheets, even though it's a down 5% move. It's a violent move in a lot of different asset classes. Quite frankly, it's kind of I've been doing this for almost 30 years, and this is a little bit different. It's a little bit different from what I've seen. You know, I think that we start with the famous quote from Sandy Weill, I believe, which was, you need to stay on the dance floor as long as you can, but you don't want to be the last to leave. And I feel like a little bit of this deleveraging of gross or trading strategies or trading ideas happened hard and fast. I think when we started this, that triple Q IWM spread moved 6% in one day. That's a significant move, a significantly violent move with an S&P down 1%. You know, you could point to the fact that occurred when, you know, Trump was nominated and J.D. Vance was announced as vice president. You could point to a time when the Fed was believed to pivot to an easing environment. There's a variety of different things that you could point to, but that trade started in an incredibly violent way. And a lot of it has to do with the liquidity. There just isn't liquidity in the markets that people think. The markets are not as liquid as people think. And, you know, thematic investing works on the way up, as I like to say. When you're getting into it, you know, you sort of help push the spreads in your favor. And when you get out, you tend to push the spreads against you. In other words, it works better on the way up and it works terrible on the way out because of the liquidity constraints. You know, when you're looking at the S&P and you see the S&P is less volatile. So honestly, when you think about spreads, you think about that in terms of VAR or risk. That VAR risk is actually higher for spreads right now than it is for owning outright S&P. Like, it's like owning outright S&P is not that risky of a trade. Now, that being said, we are selling because people are taking profits. So we are going down. That's 5-6% as you described from the highs. But the deleveraging of the IWM versus triple Qs moving 20% in a month, where you have the home builders up 17% in a month, and you have a NVIDIA down almost 40% from its highs today. Those are significant moves, but it's really just shells moving across the table as people just put different positions on or de-risk from assets that worked to assets that didn't. The yen trade is being part of that. The copper trade, you could say, is part of that. You know, they're all kind of related to each other. I mean, the markets have kind of turned into a giant spread machine because that's how people are trading. So it's new, it's different. These spreads are more volatile, and quite frankly, like, you know, it might make, you know, more sense to think about what your outright positions are more than your spreads. What do you think right now? I mean, what do you think investors should be doing today? What type of rotation do you think they should be looking at, you know, with big tech and Russell doing what we did, what we just described?
Well, thank you, Josh. Those were, I thought, excellent points. The just to sort of add on to this liquidity issue, I mean, if you look at market structure today, and you and I have talked about this in the past, how option growth has just grown so much relative to cash volume. So that's part of that liquidity structure. And then when you have levered hedge funds, pod shops, or the big macro funds putting these trades on with leverage, you know, a lot of these trades are sort of theoretically hedged, long Qs, short IWM. Right. But are they really that hedged in a way? Right. When you have these kinds of moves, it really begs a lot of questions. But it's also really reflects about market structure, liquidity, all those points you were making. I think, you know, I'm certainly getting a lot of inbound about whether, OK, wow, well, Russell's ripping. Finally, it's been a dog for years. It's underperformed. Is this, do I get long the Russell now beyond a quick market structure related move and into something more serious? And I think that that really gets back to the fundamentals. And I think the fact that the let's back up for a second. Look, in late in the second quarter, the Mag 6, Mag 7, whatever, where it's ripping, you added on almost 3 PE points to the Mag 6 index there, right? And that index had been growing beautifully with a lot of great earnings upgrades. Let's see what later this week brings in terms of earnings reports and whether that earnings can, you know, once again, you know, sort of recharge that fundamental dimension of the Mag 6. But there was no question, there was a reason to sort of like, oh my God, I'm up huge on my Mag 6. Let me take some profits here. The harder question is do you really buy the Russell? And just to lay out a few facts here, Josh, you know, if you look back over 10 years on actual earnings, the Russell 2000 has generated inferior earnings growth to the S&P 500 and probably half that of what the NDX has done, right? So if you're buying this because, you mentioned, you know, the Trump catalyst is sort of being the starting point for this reversal we've been talking about, you know, so I guess the question is Trump going to make small caps great again? And I think that question has to be considered. Look, if you went back to November 2016, you saw the Russell outperform the SPX for a bit, and then it kind of faded, and then it rebounded or outperformed again after the Tax Reform Act, and then it lasted about half a year, and then faded. It's a volatile. That outperformance is always volatile there. And I think it's hard to really delineate, is there going to be a ton of incremental earnings growth if Trump is elected relative to, say, Kamala? And B, of course, you know, look, back in early July when this trade started, July 10th, July 11th, you know, Trump was, we're talking about red sweep. Now we're talking about much more of a coin toss, it looks like, based on some of the recent polling and betting parlors estimations of who's going to win. So that, and yet that this trade still has continued, you know, the Russell is still seems to be outperforming. Let's see how long it goes here. So anyway, I just want to highlight that. But I think, look, what are the, you know, are the small cap earnings as a group going to really rock in this quarter and the next quarter and the quarter after that? If they are, then I think you can make a, you know, a good case to commit to that. But I think you have to look at the big picture here that inflation is coming down. You're seeing revenue beats less than earnings beats, which means that companies are by and large doing another good, a lot of good work at managing margins here there. But going forwards, if inflation continues to cool, maybe we get a little bit more economic cooling. Who has the pricing pressure? Is it the big companies or is it the smaller companies? My bet is that it's the, you know, in those kinds of conditions, you want to stay with the larger companies. They can just weather those storms.
Can I interrupt real quick? I think,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
The first part of that trade was, as I said, was the Trump trade. But I think the second part of the trade is literally, I think, after Google's earnings, people questioning the AI trade. So I think that, you know, with Microsoft earnings tonight, it's going to be interesting to say. But I would say that a little bit of the second part of this unwind is the questioning of the AI trade after Google's earnings. So I think that's also something that needs to be thrown in there. And I think also from a trading perspective, I think the market's learned a lot from GameStop and AMC. And I've been trading options for a long time. And when you see, when I used to say, when you see a stock trading near a top or something that has a high short interest, you know, which is sort of going in the wrong direction, and vol is incredibly low, that was always my favorite time to buy calls. Because the risk reward is just fantastic. And I think the market is saying that same thing with what they did with IWM. It was sat in that, didn't move for like months. And it started to move. It got kind of above like a sort of a breakout range, and people just rip calls to get long. So anyways, that's one of the things I wanted to add there. And again, I just generally still stay bullish. The VIX is high. People are nervous. The Fed's up. Microsoft's up. I don't know. I still like owning gold. Just throw that out there too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's certainly an asset that is has its own structural theme behind it, as we've talked about in the past. As I see it, the Russell 2000, it's had the greatest PE expansion of the major indices year to date here. I don't see an index level earnings case. I will tell you that I think there's a lot of individual companies that are small that are in that index that are probably great buys there if the valuation's right. But at the index level, I just don't see it. And so I think investors have to be very thoughtful about just not wholesale buying this just because a couple of traders have made a ton of money or maybe lost a lot of money in the last 3 or 4 weeks here. So that's how I see it. But
thoughts? I think it's a trade. Again, trading versus investing, I think this is a trade. I think, as you said, there's good investing opportunities, but this is a trade. People use options to get into the trade, and I think that's where we are. So just keep an eye on trades versus investing. We'll see where we get to the other side of it. That's it for today. Again, this is Josh Silva, Passaic Partners. You can find me on Bloomberg, the website www.passaicpartners.com or the Passaic Partners LinkedIn page.
And this is Michael Purvis at Talbot and Capital Advisors. You can find me on LinkedIn or on Bloomberg. Thanks very much for listening. Until next time.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.